any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. There's been so much going on of late, I'm profoundly troubled. There's an effort to take my blog, this is related to the lawsuit I've spoken about, and I've been very apprehensive, concerned why there's such an insistence that now they have moved to seize my blog on Thursday by 5 p.m., and I realized it's because the Alex Jones trial is taking place. There's keen interest in Sandy Hook, and my blog just happens to be perhaps the greatest resource for Sandy Hook information that we have available on the internet. So why it should not be surprising, therefore, that this is what is going on. And I recognize I have a duty and obligation to the public to go ahead and share as much as I can about what actually happened at Sandy Hook. So I published two blogs here, one last night or yesterday and the other this morning. Here's the first. Sandy Hook parents to testify against Alex Jones and a culture of lies with analysis. Now, what I've got going on here is an article published by Elizabeth Williamson, of whom you will hear the following. Editor's note. Elizabeth Williamson has mastered the art of special pleading by selecting the evidence that agrees with a predetermined conclusion and eliminating the rest. You will not find her addressing the stage photos in the parking lot, for example, which prove that they rearranged the kids to get a better shot. The FBI Consolidated Crime Report for 2012, which shows no murders or non-negligent manslaughters in Newtown, of which Sandy Hook is a part, or the FEMA manual for a mass casualty exercise involving children, which you can download here as a PDF. Nor does she acknowledge my petition before the United States Supreme Court, which displays the lengths to which they will resort to conceal the truth about Sandy Hook. Under fake news and encyclopedias, you'll find a photo of Elizabeth Williamson. Now, if you checked on that first link about the stage photos, here's what you're going to get. The top is the one went worldwide. The second one taken minutes earlier, and you'll see they rearranged the kids to get a better shot. They rearranged the kids to get a better shot. You'll also find you can download the FBI Consolidated Crime Report for 2012, which in the category of murders or non-negligent manslaughters for Newtown, which includes Sandy Hook, the number is zero, zero. So according to the FBI, we have zero murders or non-negligent homicides in Newtown and therefore in Sandy Hook for 2012, when the shooting is alleged to have taken place on 14 December 2012. Now, bear in mind, what we have here then is a government report that contradicts the official narrative. It's similar to 9/11. The U.S. Geological Survey undertook dust studies of 35 locations in lower Manhattan and found elements, barium, strontium, lithium, lanthanum, tritium, and more, that would not have been present had this not been a nuclear event. So in that case, too, we had an official government report that was contradicting the official government narrative. And look here at this photograph sent around the world. there are a whole lot of parents there. In fact, in a less crop version, you can see 6 or 8 parents there. You're even looking at several parents in the background. Look between boy number 1 and boy number 2, where they rearranged and brought up this little boy in a dark sweater and blue jeans to the front of the line when they had before a little girl in a pink sweater and a short skirt. They thought it would be more photogenic, so they rearranged the kids. Is that consistent with an emergency evacuation when there's a mass murder taking place? Obviously not. Neither is the FBI Consolidated Crime Report. It contradicts. So there's a prima facie case right here that this was fraudulent. Look in between boy number 1 and boy number 2. You see several parents just casually looking on, leading me to describe this photograph as lounging at the massacre. Lounging at the massacre. Look over at the left. There's someone who may be an official. Looks like he's taking a photograph, holding up his fist. But all the parents here. What are the parents doing there? Did someone think, wow, we got a mass shooting, let's call parents? And if parents were arriving on the scene, wouldn't they grab their kids and get the hell out of Dodge? Of course they would. This is just ridiculous. What's going on here is ridiculous. So if I can get back to here we go, to the blog. Plus, you can download the FEMA manual. You can have it for yourself as a PDF. You can get my petition before the Supreme Court. It continues to talk about some of the purported parents at Sandy Hook. The first trial begins on Tuesday in Austin, and I gather it's being televised, where Mr. Jones and his InfoWars website are based. Neil Heslin and Scarlett Lewis, the parents of Jesse Lewis 6, who died at Sandy Hook, will testify to the torment they suffered after Mr. Jones implied on his show in 2017 that Mr. Heslin's televised recollection of cradling Jesse's body shortly after the shooting was false. The family has since endured years of accusations and threats. Well, here's my editor's note. While you won't hear it from Elizabeth Williamson, Neil Heslin claims that he held his dying son in his arms, while Dr. Wayne Carver, medical examiner for the state of Connecticut, stated during his press conference that the parents were not allowed to see their children, much less hold them in their arms while they died. Here's a passage from my petition about Heslin, which Alex Jones challenged. The Fourth Court of Appeals affirmed all the rulings of the lower court and concluded in their 58-page opinion on March 18th, 2021, that there were no reasonable disputed facts in this case, and went ahead and asserted the official version that there's no reasonable dispute regarding the following facts. Notice, there's not a question of whether there's a dispute. There's a question of whether it's reasonable, because it turns out under the summary judgment protocols of Wisconsin, the judge has the right to decide the facts, whether they're reasonable or not, and if they're unreasonable, to just set them aside. But notice a part of what it claims to be the reasonable facts. On December 14, 2012, a mass shooting occurred at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. Tragically, 26 people were killed, including 6 staff members and 20 children who were aged 6 and 7. See Jones v. Heslin, stating Neil Heslin's son was killed in the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting in December 2012, and rejecting the substantial truth doctrine as a basis to dismiss Heslin's defamation claims related to statements disputing Heslin's assertion that he held his deceased son in his arms, Soto v. Bushmaster. So they go on to claim, on December 14, 2012, 20-year-old Adam Lanza forced his way into Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown and during the course of 264 seconds, fatally shot 20 first-grade children and 6 staff members and wounded 2 other staff members. Posner's 6-year-old son, N, was one of the children killed during the Sandy Hook shooting. Now, what's absurd about this? Who would know it was 264 seconds? I mean, this is analogous to Buffalo, where we had this black guy who claimed that he'd spoken to the shooter the day before, apparently when he was supposed to be sizing up the scene, which is ridiculous, for an hour. And they talked about critical race theory and the like, and even bought him a drink, a Gatorade. Well, as Scorpio observed during a discussion of this, he's supposed to be a white supremacist. Well, what self-respecting white supremacist is going to spend an hour talking about critical race theory with a black guy? Not only that, but the same black guy during an interview, when talked about the sequence of shots, he said, well, there was a boom, the first shot, and then the second shot occurred 1.7 seconds later. What, did he have a stopwatch? Did he know he'd need to have a stopwatch out so he could time the shots that he didn't even know were coming? This is just completely absurd. And the American people are supposed to buy this. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals buys it. They quote it, but it's ridiculous. Both of those cases were decided on procedural grounds. Neither of those cases address the question, did anybody die at Sandy Hook? So, which is it? Either Wayne Carver was lying about the parents not being able to see their kids, or Neil Heslin has been lying about holding Jesse in his arms as he died. They cannot both be true. But bear in mind that they could both be false, which appears to be the case. Alex Jones cannot be guilty of defamation by denying that Neil Heslin held his dying son in his arms, as long as that is true. And even Wayne Carver supports the conclusion that Alex had it right. Now, up here, I link to Wayne, where he's given his press conference. Let's see if we can pick it up. I'm going to move into a part where he's talking about this.
But this probably is the worst I have seen, or the worst that I know of any of my colleagues having seen. And that all the more makes me proud and grateful to our staff, who, to a man, have just behaved most professionally and strongly. And I hope they, and I hope the people of Newtown don't have a crash on their head later.
Doctor, on that examination, you saw which caliber of the handgun compared to the rifle of the
good thing it's not being prosecution, because then I couldn't answer that. But all the ones that I know of at this point were caused by the long weapon.
Was the primary weapon?
Yes.
And what caliber were
the bullets? Question was, what caliber were these bullets? And I probably know more about firearms than most pathologists, but if I say it in court, they yell at me and don't make me answer, so.
He doesn't even know the caliber of the weapon.
Doctor, can you tell us the nature of the wounds? Were they at very close range for the children suffering across the burning? I only did 7 of the autopsies. The victims I had ranged from 3 to 11 wounds apiece, and I only saw 2 of them with close range shooting. But that's that's a sample. I really don't have detailed information on the rest of the injuries.
But you said it was the long rifle that was used?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm lucky I can tell you how many I found. I don't know. There were lots of them. Okay. This type of weapon is not... The bullets are designed in such a fashion that the energy, this is very clinical, I shouldn't be saying this, but the energy is deposited in the tissue. And so, it's always a difficult question, and obviously I don't have I don't have detailed information on all of them, but this is a very devastating set of injuries. I don't, the best of my ability to answer that question, which is always less than perfect, if so, not for very long.
Well, most of the injuries?
All the ones, I believe so, yes. We did not bring the bodies and the families into contact. We took pictures of them, of their facial features. You have it's easier on the families when you do that. There is a time and a place for a person personal in the grieving process. But to accomplish this, we felt it would be best to do it this way, and you can sort of you can control the situation depending on the photographer, and I have very good photographers.
So there it is. He has very good photographers, and the families were not allowed to come into contact with the children. So which was it? Was Wayne Carver lying about the parents not being able to see their kids, or Neil Heslin has been lying about holding Jesse in his arms as he died? She goes on and talks about Leonard Posner and Veronique De La Rosa. By the way, I have doubts that they were ever even married, or that Noah is an offspring of Leonard Posner and Veronique. I think that's quite unlikely. The Sandy Hook families, this is Elizabeth Williamson continued, have a broader goal beyond damage for Mr. Jones. They want the trial to alert Americans to the mounting damage done to vulnerable people in civic life by viral political lies, whether bogus theories denying mass shootings or false claims of a stolen 2020 election that brought violence to the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Look how many bases she's trying to cover here. Uvalde, Buffalo, Parkland, Las Vegas. She's even thrown in the Capitol, claiming anyone who disputes the election at 2020 is making false claims. She further compounds. Mr. Jones is allied with former President Donald J. Trump, who appeared on InfoWars during the 2016 campaign. Mr. Jones also has ties to extremist groups involved in the January 6th attack on the Capitol and is under scrutiny for his role in planning events preceding it. But anyone who looks into it knows there was no insurrection. There was no instigation of an insurrection that Donald Trump spoke until 1/11, where the events had already been taking place. Williamson continues, Mr. Jones has spent years falsely claiming on his radio and online InfoWars shows that the December 2012 mass shootings that killed 20 first graders and 6 educators at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, was staged by the federal government as a pretext for confiscating American firearms. Well, I assert to you that's categorically true. There's just no doubt about it. Where Barack Obama even vitiated the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States that were heretofore only allowed without by the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which thereby allowed stage shooting, fake events, and others to take place within the United States legally. Conspiracy theorist Williamson continues, have accosted the families in public, defaced and stolen memorials to their loved ones, and threatened their lives. They have tormented the parents on social media, demanding they exhume their children's bodies and prove they were murdered. Mr. Posner and Ms. De La Rosa have moved a dozen times after conspiracy theorists posted their home addresses and other personal information. Well, that's quite an amazing claim, because you can't even find where Leonard Posner, whom I assert is a legal fiction, lived. You can find places where Reuben Vabner lived. And while Reuben Vabner may have moved a number of times, I don't believe it has anything to do with conspiracy theorists or with harassment. Meanwhile, I add the following editor's note. As I've explained from the beginning, Leonard Posner appears to be a fiction, for I believe the person who came to Madison and testified under his name is actually Reuben Vabner, and that Noah Posner is also a fiction, created out of photographs of his son, Michael Vabner, when he was a child. Kelly Watt was the first to notice the resemblance, which I reported many times in many places. Some may therefore find it acutely intriguing that Lenny posted a photograph of Noah celebrating his 8th birthday. Count the candles on the cake. Elizabeth Williamson has told us that Noah, at age 6, was the youngest of the victims at Sandy Hook. But here we have a photo of Noah celebrating his 8th birthday, which is quite a remarkable achievement for a boy who died at the age of 6. So does Elizabeth have it wrong, or is Lenny putting one over on us? Noah clearly looks older than the photo showing him as a victim in 2012. So perhaps I'm not guilty of defamation either, after all. They go on to talk about Mr. Heslin appearing on an NBC broadcast featuring Mr. Jones, hosted by Megyn Kelly, who recently joined the network from Fox. I lost my son. I buried my son. I had my son with a bullet hole through his head, he told Ms. Kelly. Afterwards, Mr. Jones and Owen Scheuer, an InfoWars sidekick, disputed Mr. Heslin's account, implying he was lying in service of a government hoax aimed at gun control. It's my right to say it. I can question big PR events like Sandy Hook, where there are major anomalies, Mr. Jones said on his show. They're using Sandy Hook and they're using the victims and their families as a way to get rid of free speech in America. That's the plan. I think he's got it exactly right. Last week, a Texas appellate court rejected Mr. Jones' request to delay payment of $1 million in sanctions resulting from his failure to show up for a deposition in the Connecticut case earlier this year. But Mr. Jones' lawyers told Connecticut Superior Judge Barbara Bellis at a hearing that Mr. Jones was sick. He was broadcasting live from his studio in an industrial park on Alvin Delane Boulevard here. Mr. Raynell, Mr. Jones' lawyer, argued that the sanctions should wait until juries render their judgments, which Mr. Judge will almost certainly appeal. The court ordered Mr. Jones to pay $1 million immediately. Well, just think about it. That's what they're doing here. They're ordering immediately that it's supposed to be the case that Alex Jones is going to have to pay immediately. And if I can get back here to my blog, let's see what we've got. That's what they're doing with me, too. They're trying to make an immediate claim on my blog, such that it turns out now they're going to go after my blog and I'm going to have it basically shut down at 5 p.m. this Thursday. So from 5 p.m. Thursday, it appears jamesfetzer.org will no longer be functional, but will direct you to a posnervfetzer.com website where you can see some of the documents related to my appeals of this judgment, including my motion for reconsideration, but also my motion to stay, because after all, I have a petition before the United States Supreme Court. So it seems to me perfectly reasonable they ought to wait. The difference I'm in between with Alex Jones, while I have a $1.1 million lien against me, I don't have the resources to pay it. In Wisconsin, there's a homeowner's exemption. A husband and wife get a $75,000, $150,000 with my mortgage. There's really nothing left. In addition, I have Social Security and retirement income, which is also protected. I do have a vacation trailer out at Rock Lake in Lake Mills, which they tried to seize and sell. But while I originally paid $60,000 for it quite a few years ago, about a decade ago, they put it up for $30,000, which would have to be split with my wife as joint owner, since she's not liable for these damages. But at that, they did not get any bids. So they would have got $15,000 there. Now, instead, they're making an argument to go for the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, and my blog, even though, as I've explained, Leonard Posner cannot anticipate making any money from the book or the blog unless he's going to market them or put them up as they are. Because if he markets them after editing them, then it's no longer my book, so he can't do that. And obviously, he spent all his time taking down videos and blogs about Sandy Hook. So there's a condition under the law known as estoppel that prevents him from doing that. if you go to my blog now and you download, you know, you'll see I have about my Supreme Court case, but also now this is an extension of the Sandy Hook case, and you'll see what's going on there. So when this transformation takes place on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern, you'll be directed by jamesfetzer.org to those documents. Please study them with care because they make what I consider to be an ironclad case that there's no entitlement to take because no monetary value here. He can't use domain names with my name, James Fetzer, or false flags in them because they contradict his position against false flags and against me. Nor can he use a book where he won a lawsuit over three sentences disputing the authenticity of a death certificate, but that left 440 pages. Subtract, say, three pages, which is more than three sentences. He did not dispute the other 440 pages of material. Let me add that I'm going to do my best to get a new blog up at jameshfetzer.org, jameshfetzer.org. So if you come to jameshfetzer.org and you find it's directing you to those lawsuit documents, bear in mind, look for jameshfetzer.org because I'm going to be doing my best to get it up and out. But I'm convinced they're doing this because they do not want the public to have access to all the information about Sandy Hook, which is why that I've accumulated over the years, which is why I'm now doing these blogs with a great sense of urgency in order to share that information with the public, given the vast interest that's going to accumulate now from this happening here. And I presume we're going to have a break coming. Okay, watch for the break. Standing by for the break.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Perhaps I'm slow on the uptake, but it only occurred to me last night while they're making such urgency about getting my website, my blog, out of the way. And it's because of that vast repository of information about Sandy Hook. With the Alex Jones case taking place, there are going to be people who want to search the web to find out information about Sandy Hook. And it may be that my website is one of the most robust in terms of a wide range of information, evidence, and what you need to know about Sandy Hook, access to lots of videos. So please do this on behalf of your nation. Share those blogs. Go to jamesfetzer.org. Get the URLs, share them, copy them, download them, share them as widely as you can with others while you still can. There's only, between now and 5 p.m. tomorrow, we've got 24 hours plus 5 or 6. We got about less than 30 hours to get the job done. Share them as widely. Send these links to everyone you can. Go to my blog, jamesfetzer.org. I'm talking about the first two, the most recent, two most recent blogs. The second of which I just put up this morning, Alex Jones calls out murder of due process at Sandy Hook show trial. Alex Jones appears to be getting the same treatment I received in the lawsuit brought against me by the man who calls himself Leonard Posner, whom I am convinced is a legal fiction played by Reuben Wagner, who came to Madison and testified under oath. Everything about my trial was wrong, as I explain in detail below. Now they are taking my blog on Thursday at 5 p.m. CT to make sure that I am unable to continue to explain what's going on here and how the law has been weaponized to censor and abuse those who speak out about false flags or staged events. We have had a spate of them at late with Buffalo, Uvalde, and most recently Highland Park. Download the law enforcement false flag stage event checklist I published with Brian Davidson, PI, private investigator, and you will see the massive effort that's been exerted to deceive and mislead the American people, especially to give up their guns. Don't do it. If you click on the legal fiction played by Reuben Fabner, then you'll see where I published about being found in contempt for trying to find an impeachment witness to demonstrate that the man who came to testify under the name of Leonard Posner was in fact not Leonard Posner, at least not the Leonard Posner for which we've seen millions of photographs all over the world. Indeed, it was most peculiar when it turned out that they were eager to render confidential, to guarantee not be shareable, the video deposition. They were particularly concerned about the images. And I pointed out to the court, why should they be concerned about the images of this man if he is Leonard Posner, whose images appeared millions of times already around the world? It only makes sense if it's not the guy it's supposed to be. And that's indeed what happened here. Moreover, now, I have links on Buffalo, Uvalde, and Highland Park where you can find video exposés of what's going on there. And you can directly download the law enforcement false flag stage event checklist I did with Brian. You also can access a piece of mine I did a few years ago about the Second Amendment and the politics of gun control. Meanwhile, here's Alex Jones talking about the murder of due process during his trial. He's coming out. He's stopping. He's going to put tape across his mouth to show he's being gagged. Then he's going to turn and come out and talk to the press.
Yes, ma'am. The statement is this. The judge is doing this for political reasons. Everything is hidden in plain view. I've been found guilty by the judge, and now there's a trial where they tell a jury to decide how much money I paid was more guilty. That's never happened. We gave them all the discovery. A default is when somebody is being sued and they leave the country and don't show up for the trial. Or they get caught doing criminal things like paying off a judge or something. They have taken my right for a jury to decide if I'm guilty, and now a judge tells a jury that I'm guilty, and they're trying to hide that from the jury. And during the jury questioning, they were really confused and kept asking, well, I thought you're innocent until proven guilty in criminal or civil trial. She goes, well, this is a special case. I say he's guilty. She read that to the jury. I say Alex Jones is guilty. And now you're going to decide how guilty he is. And then they get up there and put all these edited videos out completely out of context. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And this is the weaponization of the judiciary. It's absolutely horrifying. This is a witch hunt. This is a show trial. This will go down in history as one of the greatest show trials ever to happen, not just here, but even in places like Nazi Germany. I mean, even in Nazi Germany, they let you basically be innocent until proven guilty. They would then just rig parts of the trial. Here, she says, I'm guilty until proven guilty. Guilty until proven guilty. Not guilty until proven innocent like Nazi Germany, because you were guilty until proven innocent in Nazi Germany. Here, I'm guilty, the judge says, and then they decide how guilty. And then, I mean, the process of this has been unbelievable. They have all our emails, all our documents, all our videos that we gave them. They defaulted as saying we didn't give them any of that. I spent millions and millions of dollars. They don't tell anybody that she's fined me $1.5 million And we're not allowed to tell the jury that. She put an order out saying, you will not tell the jury that you're innocent. You will not tell the jury that you're not getting a fair trial. This is an order and motions in limine. You will not tell the jury that you're not a bad person. I have to sit there while they go, he agrees he's guilty, and you're just going to decide how much he pays. This is the murder of your rights to due process, to the federal constitution and the state constitution of Texas, that in any number of just a few dollars, that you get the jury to decide if you're guilty, and then they decide damages in a separate group of hearings.
Mr. Jones, I have to interrupt, but what do you have to say to the victim's families about the evidence that was laid out? We all know Sandy Hook, it happened, you mocked the parents. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, well, that wasn't. So you just said the evidence. That was a bunch of edited garbage. Did you notice he kept saying that I made fun of Heslin? I never said his name until today. And we're going to show all that in there. What? All lies. My fill-in host was just reading a Zero Hedge article because it was a huge controversy. I went on Megyn Kelly and said I thought it happened. I went on Megyn Kelly and said I was sorry. They didn't show you that. They showed a controversy about something that a news article in Zero Hedge said that a guy on the radio was just reading a ton of articles hours and hours a day, and they make that a big giant conspiracy that we were attacking him. Never said his name, but I'm mocking. You just said it. Aren't you smart? This is the incredible deception we're dealing with. I'm going to tell you again. You're having all of your rights robbed. This is a kangaroo court. This is a show trial. This is a constitution destroying absolute, total, and complete travesty. This is lawfare. This is the weaponization. As soon as the guy said, you've already lost.
You've already lost,
because the judge said I was guilty. I don't have $1 million. That's another thing. I don't have $1 million in the bank.
You have too much money.
Brother, this is all. I know this is going to blow up on their Facebook. Down the road, everybody's going to know.
Alex, what is the $8 million in cryptocurrency?
That was donated. Yeah. Okay. It's all been spent.
Money.
And it's all been spent.
That you got.
And it's all been spent. And it's all gone fighting this.
Why didn't you show up to earlier hearings? Why didn't you show up to the earlier hearings?
I'll come back and talk to you guys later. Why didn't Heslin show up for earlier hearings? I'm working on the air every day. I'm trying to run an operation. We're not allowed to tell the jury
that, more importantly.
We're not allowed to tell the jury that InfoWars is bankrupt. And we're putting federal filings in showing we have no money to prove that.
Do you claim to be arrested?
Ladies and gentlemen, listen, if you want to be bamboozled and lose your First Amendment and lose your Seventh Amendment and lose all that, go ahead. You're having your rights to a trial by jury to decide if you're guilty or innocent stolen from you. This is a kangaroo court. This is a political action. It's a witch hunt. I'll be back later.
Well, I think that was a pretty good statement by Alex all in all. I mean, what he's talking about is restrictions that were similarly imposed upon me. Indeed, when I was testifying during my trial for damages, and that's what's going on with Alex, there's been a determination that he's liable. He's already been found guilty. Now the question becomes, what amount of damages is appropriate and presumably proportional to the offense he committed? Similarly with me. They brought in a jury. It was a dozen Madisonians age 30 or younger, one man and 11 women, all of whom, get this, all of whom professed on during their voir dire, during the questioning of the jury, that they'd never even heard of this man, Alex Jones. Can you believe that? They never even heard of Alex Jones. And during the trial, the plaintiff projected the image of Noah Posner on the wall, this adorable six-year-old kid, whom I'm telling you has now celebrated his eighth birthday. So what's going on here? Did I commit a defamation when I challenged the authenticity of the death certificate, where I'm under a court order that I cannot repeat? What I said in the book, and where if you extracted three sentences, there are 437 pages. If you took each sentence a page, and they're not actually worth a page, they're only sentences. All that other material was not challenged. In other words, there was more than enough evidence there, including the FEMA manual, for example, including the photographs you've seen, for example, to establish that nobody died at Sandy Hook. But this was a very cleverly contrived lawsuit brought against me, a novel legal strategy to exclude evidence, and the judge went right with the program. I think they love doing it here in Wisconsin because Wisconsin has this bizarre summary judgment procedure. Now, summary judgment is only permissible when there are no disputed facts. In other words, when both the parties, the plaintiff bringing the lawsuit and the defendant against whom is being brought, agree on the facts. In my case, it could hardly be more opposite. He's insisting Sandy Hook was real and he lost a kid. I'm insisting Sandy Hook was fake and nobody died. How could there be a greater opposition? And yet, even though I made it very clear in my original answer to the complaint, that's the first response I made to being sued, where I thought there were dubious aspects about it, but that it would be an opportunity to get all of the evidence I'd accumulated, collaborating with 13 experts, including six PhDs, where we established that school had been closed by 2008, that there were no teachers or students there, and that it had been a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control, that all that deserved to be presented to the public through a judicial process. Well, they put a halt to that at the scheduling conference. The judge declared that I would not be able to present my evidence that Sandy Hook never happened, or as I would put it more precisely, was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control, that was a rabbit hole we would not go down. And he claimed it had nothing to do, that it was irrelevant to the truth or authenticity of the death certificate, which purported to claim that the decedent died at Sandy Hook Elementary on 14 December 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds. I mean, if you want to be baffled by a judicial decision, it's very similar to the complaint itself. The death certificate I published had no file number. It had no town and no state certification. A death certificate was attached to the complaint that had a file number, a town, and a state certification, and yet the allegation was made in the complaint that there was no material difference between them. Well, material differences are ones that matter under the law. Obviously, whether you have a file number, a state, or a town certification is a material difference. Therefore, this case was a legal abomination from the beginning. But I went forward with it because I believed I would be treated fair and square. I understood about summary judgment, that as a summary judgment proceeds, that the court has to take for granted, take as true all the positions of the defendant. In my case, that Sandy Hook was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder. The school had been closed by 2008. There were no students there. All those assertions I was making in my answer as true, and then ask the defendant, does he agree? Now, if he agrees, then there are no disputed facts, and you can proceed to a summary judgment. That's how it normally happens in most of the states of the union. That's a proper summary judgment procedure. I wrongly believed that would be the summary judgment procedure in Wisconsin. But Wisconsin has a peculiar situation. Instead of being a three-step process in Texas, in Wisconsin, it's a four-step process where the judge initially looks to see whether the plaintiff has what looks to be a prima facie case to bring a charge, a case against a defendant, then looks to whether the defendant has anything to say in response. But where, and this is absolutely crucial, the judge has the opportunity to exercise his subjective opinion about the reasonableness of the facts. And if the facts are, in his opinion, not reasonable, then he can exclude them. Well, just as we found in the case of the appellate court when I moved up the ladder, they thought the official narrative was reasonable, and anyone who contested the official account, such as I, was unreasonable. So the judge merely set aside all the evidence I had as being unreasonable. And he even did that with regard to two forensic document experts, both of whom submitted reports that the death certificates in question, and at that point in time, there were four. This is the reports of the document examiners were all fake. I'm not able to agree or disagree. I'm merely reporting here that their report said that all four of these death certificates were fake, including the one over which I was being sued. So he just set them aside as someone else's opinion. And believe it or not, to my stupefaction, when it went up to the Court of Appeals, they agreed. Because in Wisconsin, that's the way it's done. They can exercise a subjective degree of opinion. So basically, in Wisconsin, the courts are entitled to make up the facts of a case. This is so unjust. This is so improper. Had I been in Texas, the first thing you do in Texas is ascertain all the positions asserted by the defendant and then ask the plaintiff whether he agrees. And since obviously the answer would have been false, we have disputed facts and the case has to go to a jury. So what happened in essence was in Wisconsin, I was subjected to a non-jury trial where the judge was able to determine which facts were reasonable and which were not. I regard this as completely wrong, completely improper. And having gone my way up the ladder to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and having my petition for review denied, I have gone to the U.S. Supreme Court. And it's a perfect case for the Supreme Court. It involves disputes between two states where I've been turned down at the highest level of the state of Wisconsin and where the differences between the summary judgment procedure in Texas and the summary judgment procedure in Wisconsin are glaring. It's an abuse of the Second Amendment and violates the 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal due process under law to every citizen of the United States. But very clearly in Wisconsin, as my case exemplifies, citizens of Wisconsin are being denied the right to a jury trial. So I have submitted that to the Supreme Court. Now, the number of submissions is staggering, around 10,000. The number that are accepted is small, about 80. But there's a great weeding out that takes place. I had to submit pro se because I could not afford an attorney. I'm, you know, in staggering debt. I mean, just to attorneys, I owe still about $70,000. I have this 1.1 million plus lien hanging over my head. So I had to lay out the case and make it explain how I was not able to pay for an attorney. It simplified the submission process because you have a paid attorney. They have to submit 40 different copies of your petition. They have to be printed up specially. It would run between $3,000 and $3,500 just for the printing. Whereas by doing it myself, I only have to submit 10 copies. It can be done on 8.5 by 11 paper, and I only have to submit 10. So instead of, say, $3,000 to $3,500, I wound up paying $300 to $350 for the printing. But, you know, I had to make the case, and the Supreme Court had to be satisfied. So if you go to the docket of the United States Supreme Court for Fetzer v. Posner now, because remember, in this case now, I'm the defendant bringing the case against Posner or, in effect, against the Wisconsin Court of Appeals for the Fourth District, which was the highest level that gave a reasoned opinion, denying me on the ground that my position was unreasonable. I passed the test. They filed my petition. Now, there are a total of 12 different steps involved here, and I have now reached number 10. You know, there's 10 of the 12 steps. I'm at level 10, where the case is being sent to a conference. This is a conference of the judges and the law clerks, where they sort out the cases and they decide what they're going to do about them. And if a minimum of four justices want to hear my case, then it will be put on the docket. They would normally schedule an oral hearing. They'll obtain all the documents and records from Wisconsin, which, by the way, are now going to include my motion for reconsideration on this taking order and my motion to stay the whole process until the Supreme Court rules, which I believe the Supreme Court is going to find quite fascinating and remarkable that they were so eager to move forward with this taking, which is completely unwarranted because it doesn't provide any financial benefit to the plaintiff to satisfy a financial judgment. They made up a figure. They claimed it was worth $100,000, but it can't be worth $100,000 because Posner can't do anything with it. This is a book that showed that Sandy Hook was a hoax. You think he's going to publish that, even if you could redact it? And because they're seizing it because they claim I have the copyright to the book. They cannot alter the book without altering the copyright, which means they would not be using or benefiting from what they'd seize from me. And obviously the domain names have James Fetzer, jamesfetzer.org, jamesfetzer.com, and falseflag.com, falseflag.net. Well, Leonard Posner can't use a domain name with my name in it. I'm an opponent of his. He's not going to promote me, and he's not going to use anything that says false flags. So there's nothing there that Posner can use to make money to solve the financial judgment. But under the law, you can only use money to solve a financial judgment, meaning this is wrong. And because he's gone out of his way to attack me and render the books unpublishable under a court order, to now turn around and want to benefit from the activity in which he's engaged to make them unpublishable and thereby benefit for himself is an abuse of process. So what's going on here is another form of weaponization of the law, and they're doing it now. They're making demands. I don't own the jamesfetzer.org domain name. That's owned by my publisher, Dave Gaheri, Wrongs Without a Remedy, Moon Rock Books. But they brought pressure on Gaheri, who had settled out of court with Posner, including among the terms, although he's not shared his agreement with me, I know, an agreement not to publish the book. Well, if he can't publish a book, and and Posner can't publish a book, it has no value to him either. They're back after this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
There's been a question raised about what happened to Alex in Connecticut, because, as I've explained, Wisconsin has this peculiar procedure where the judge is allowed to make up facts. Well, in Connecticut, they use a different gambit. Alex was found liable or guilty by default. That's why he came out and talked about, they claim this is default and that it wasn't a case of that kind. I mean, look, others have told me, and it may be true, I certainly wasn't aware of it when I moved here to Wisconsin, but that Wisconsin has serious problems with the judicial system, and we know that Connecticut may be the most corrupt state in the union. Connecticut got rid of its sheriffs long ago, where sheriffs are the law enforcement authorities who take most seriously the responsibility to enforce the Constitution. So if you have a state without sheriffs, that's bad news all by itself. Alex lost in Wisconsin not because they have a summary judgment process like what we have here in Wisconsin, but that during the trial phase, the judge found Alex in default, and it wasn't, to my understanding, it wasn't a summary judgment, but it was a hearing before the court. In any case, it was not on the same type of ground as I was deprived of my right to a trial to have my facts resolved by a jury, which, of course, is why I'm going to the United States Supreme Court. And listen, whatever happens now with this new variation where they're taking or trying to take my blog and the book, which I explain is completely indefensible, the judges set a hearing for 17 August, which is not acting with the speed I had expected with a motion to stay, given that the case is before the Supreme Court. I mean, what's the urgency? And the answer, of course, hit me like a bolt of lightning last night. It's because of the Alex Jones trial. They don't want people doing research on Sandy Hook and coming to Jim Fetzer's blog. I mean, that's what it is. And it's the reason why now I'm putting out a couple of blogs that I might not have otherwise without realizing now that they're going to shut me off, try to cut me down, where I'm going to have to create a new alternative blog. And it will be jameshfetzer.org, not jamesfetzer.org. That will be redirected to documents about this taking case. And it's going to happen at 5 p.m. on Thursday, the day tomorrow, today being Wednesday, it's going to happen tomorrow. Meanwhile, on this most recent blog, I go on to explain. My petition is on the docket of the Supreme Court, and you can actually download, you can look at the docket by just clicking on the link. While I originally believed it was a First and Second Amendment case, and that's, notice how Alex Jones is presenting his as a First Amendment, and he mentions the Seventh, which is a right to a trial by jury. The summary judgment protocols in Wisconsin allowed the judge to decide whether or not my facts were reasonable and exclude them if in his subjective opinion they were not, as you will see from my petition, which you can download to your own desktop here, and I've given you a link. You can download the petition to your own desktop. The Court of Appeals, 4th District, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court agreed. Now, in my filings, you see, I have an appendices, and of course, I integrate the key rulings from those courts in my petition itself. Now, the petition is absent the appendices, which you can also download, by the way, from the Supreme Court website, runs 38 pages, but they're about 8 pages are preliminary, so it's about 30, and of the 30, about 10 are laying out the history of the case, and then 20 arguing why this deserves to be heard by the Supreme Court. Because, of course, the summary judgment procedure in Wisconsin denies a defendant his Seventh Amendment right to trial by jury of disputed facts because of the peculiarities built in, where I use Texas as a contrast case. I mean, it's very, very clear cut, but it will be something you may appreciate reading to understand the importance of the issue. Remember, the same summary judgment procedure is being used in Wisconsin now, today. Thousands, I venture tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents have been subjected to an improper summary judgment procedure that has built in biases that favor the plaintiff and deny the defendants their right to a trial by jury to determine disputed facts. I mean, it's so obvious. And a retired professor of law, after reviewing my petition, explained why he thought it was so important that, as he put it, I was incorporating the 7th within the 14th, meaning I was using the argument that the 14th, which says no one may be, you know, that we must, we're all American citizens are entitled to due process under law. That's the same due process, equal measures of due process under law, which is clearly not the case with regard to summary judgment here in Wisconsin. And he observed that the major problem with the American judicial system today is the abuse of summary judgment. This was from a retired professor of law. So what I think we have here, what I've teed up before the Supreme Court, is a case which has they are ruling on the procedure that was applied in my case, not on the merits. In other words, the court isn't been asked to decide whether or not Sandy Hook was real or staged. The court isn't being asked to do that. The court is simply being asked to address whether the summary judgment procedures in Wisconsin are equitable and fair under the 14th Amendment when compared with other summary judgments and procedures in other states such as Texas. And it's quite obvious. Anyone who reads the brief is going to be convinced. It's rock solid that it's not equitable. This isn't equal justice under law, and that those who are being subjected to summary judgment process here in Wisconsin are being denied their right to trial by jury, guaranteed by the Seventh Amendment. No citizen in the United States may be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law and is guaranteed a trial by jury. I mean, they talk about the amount of $20 or more. Well, we're talking $1.1 million plus. That's certainly more than $20. I was entitled to a trial by jury under the Constitution, but I was denied a trial by jury in Wisconsin. That's wrong. And therefore, another reason I believe the Supreme Court will like this case is because no one, to my knowledge, has ever raised a question about summary judgment procedures in Wisconsin. I had attorneys with whom, or former attorneys who were very familiar with the law, who simply thought this was how it's done in Wisconsin. Well, yes, it is how it's done in Wisconsin, but the point is it's not how it should be done, and it's not what the Constitution requires. So because my case involving Sandy Hook is a high-profile case, it illuminated the glaring defects in the summary judgment procedures in Wisconsin and made it, I think, irresistible to the court for the additional reason that it will highlight that even controversial defendants such as myself, a Sandy Hook skeptic, is entitled to a fair trial, is entitled to a jury trial, is entitled to a proper resolution of disputed facts, and not merely to have the subjective opinion of a series of judges who happen to believe that Sandy Hook was real and without any doubt have really not spent any time analyzing the case, but they find it expedient and convenient, less troubling. After all, that way you don't have to mess around, sort out the facts that might bring you to a surprising, unexpected, and most unwelcome conclusion that Sandy Hook was a fraud perpetrated by the Obama administration to promote gun control. So I think for all those reasons, this case is not just about me. It's a case that illustrates a chronic problem in Wisconsin. It affects every Wisconsin resident, and it reflects the fact that they are being deprived of their right to due process because other states have equitable and just summary judgment procedures, and that Wisconsin and any other state that's out of a line need to be brought in, squared away with proper summary judgment procedures, and thereby in the process reaffirm that even controversial defendants are entitled to have their right to a trial by jury and not to have their fate decided by the subjective opinions of members of the court in Wisconsin or elsewhere. I mean, it's fascinating. I think the Supreme Court's going to like it. And as I've already mentioned, I've already passed 10 of the 12 stages. And if, as I believe, at the conference they're going to decide, they're going to be at least four votes of justices who want to hear the case, then they issue a writ of certiorari, as it's known. They obtain all the files and records from Wisconsin, and they schedule oral hearings where each side has 30 minutes to present. There may or may not be another round of briefings. They may or may not even feel that oral hearings are necessary. Look, Posner didn't even file a response in relation to my petition before the Supreme Court. And why? What could they say? Their whole victory rested on the abuse of process represented by this flawed summary judgment procedure that I'm disputing. So there really was nothing for them to say. So they said nothing. Had they said something, I would have been prepared to reply. And I have no doubt the reply would have eviscerated the response. So they chose the wiser course and did not respond at all. Another attorney of my acquaintance who actually authored an amicus brief had predicted that they would not respond, and they did not. But you can also find an amicus brief there as well, which you may find of great interest. You can download that as well, which is broadening the issue from my summary judgment focus to the issue of false flags in the country. And Alex Jones clearly reinforces that point. To return to the new blog then, in other states such as Texas, the case against me would have been tossed or else sent to a jury for determination of the disputed facts. But in Wisconsin, the court could, in effect, determine the facts regardless of my evidence. It turns out this is a national problem, and I'm teeing up the case for SCOTUS to make summary judgment protocols uniform throughout the nation. I believe they are going to do just that and set things right. And here I include now an interview I did with David Zublik, with Brian Davidson and Danny Siris, talking about the role of the Connecticut State Police at Sandy Hook. Because it turns out the Connecticut State Police were running the shop behind the scene. That when I did an interview with Brian Davidson, who's mastered the techniques of internet research and including research on photographs, I just tossed him a photograph with no identification. I didn't say where it was taken, what it had to do with. And within a day or so, he'd come identified it having been taken in the parking lot at Sandy Hook, that it shows up. A crime scene vehicle on the scene. There's crime scene tape up. Wayne Carver leaning against the wall with his arms folded, awaiting the arrival of his portable mortuary tent. But the crime scene is defective because there's a string of four windows in classroom four that would be purported to be shot out that are intact. They're purportedly shot out by Adam Lanza, but here they're perfectly intact, which shows in the single photograph that there was a fraud at work. And indeed, when Brian Davidson tracked down the photograph, he found the magazine or journal where it had been published, but then its original source was, yes, in the files of the Connecticut State Police. So Connecticut State Police have a whole photographic archive, the photographs they took, because they were running the operation behind the scene, and they've removed all the metadata. So none of those photographs in the Connecticut State Police can be identified by the metadata as to where it was taken and by whom, which is and when, which is quite a remarkable indication of consciousness of guilt. I don't know if you watch when Wayne Carver's talking, their Maine State Police there can barely conceal their smirk. They're about to laugh out loud. So here we have more. In 2018, I was sued for defamation in Madison, Wisconsin over an uncertified death certificate in the book. The court would not allow me to present my proof that nobody had died on the absurd ground that it had nothing to do with the truth or accuracy of the death certificate, which alleged a decedent, Noah Posner, died at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds. I introduced reports from two forensic document experts, both of whom concluded that it was fake, but the court simply set them aside as someone else's opinion, ignoring my standing as a journalist. I submitted a mountain of evidence of my role as an investigative journalist, about which the court never ruled, because that would have raised the bar for proof for finding me guilty of defamation. They would have had to show I was negligent, but I was not negligent. I showed due diligence in all of my research. The court ignored the disputed fact of the authenticity of the document and found me guilty of defamation, even though there was no finding of negligence. I was guilty of defamation without fault. The trial for damages was captured perfectly by Kevin Barrett, the legal lynching of a truth seeker, Jim Fetzer's Stalinist-style show trial. Note how that resonates with what Alex Jones is saying. When I appealed the abuse of summary judgment, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals District 4 made what Ron Avery characterizes as gross errors. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has denied my petition for review without a word of explanation. The same day Remington settled for $73 million without establishing that anyone died at Sandy Hook. The fake shooting is being used to undermine a right to keep and bear arms, as it was planned to do. As a former Marine Corps officer, I am profoundly obligated to carry this case to the U.S. Supreme Court because, whether I am right or wrong, I was denied the right to present a defense. I've been saddled with $1.1 million in liens as a result of a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation to publish those who speak out and expose fraud and corruption by the government. I am doing what I can to protect your rights. If this case stands, then we can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. I am doing this for all of us, but I need your help. I have the law and the evidence on my side. What I don't have is the money. I'm doing this for the sake of the nation, but my attorneys expect to be paid. Lend a hand if you can. And there you're directed to givesendgo.com/fundingfetzer if you're so inclined. Now, remember, I'm doing this pro se before the Supreme Court, so it's not for an attorney. I ran out of gas. I ran out of money long ago. I still have around 70,000 of legal bills I have to cover, including an additional $5,000 or $6,000 from this taking lawsuit to seize my property, in my opinion, completely wrongfully. Let me add, there are other videos embedded here. Check out Jim Fetzer, What Happened at Sandy Hook from 5 December of 2020, but also False Flags from 9/11 to Sandy Hook and beyond at 20 February 2016. I have done just a huge amount of research on these subjects, and it's very clear to me at this point in time that that's exactly the reason why they want to take down my blog. They want to redirect so that no one who's following Alex Jones who wants to learn out from independent sources what actually happened at Sandy Hook can have access to the mountain of evidence that I have accumulated here. That is the goal. And that's the very reason why I have realized that I cannot simply not continue to blog about this. I've got to continue to do it and run whatever risks that may entail for this greater good of the nation. I accepted that role when I was commissioned as an officer in the Marine Corps, and I continue to believe that each of us has an obligation to protect our nation from enemies, foreign and domestic. I simply had no idea that so many would turn out to be domestic. Now, I'm glad to open the line to callers. The number, of course, is 540-352-4452. If you'd like to discuss any aspect of this, I understand now that the Alex Jones trial is being televised. So it may be that the vast majority of this audience is already preoccupied watching the trial. Just know there are vast resources available here for anyone who wants to find out what really happened at Sandy Hook. Remember, I specialize in bringing together groups of efforts to sort out what really happened. I did this beginning with JFK. I brought together the best experts to ever study the case. We discovered the autopsy x-rays had been altered to conceal a fist-sized blowout to the back of the head. That was evidence of a second shot to the head. That the brain shown in diagrams and photographs in the National Archives is not even the brain of JFK. I brought together a world authority on the human brain, who is also an expert on wound ballistics, a PhD in physics, who is also an MD and board certified in radiation oncology, which is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy. So he's an expert in the interpretation of X-rays, a leading expert on photographs and films and the assassination a physician who was actually in trauma room number one when JFK's moribund body was brought in, and then 2 days later was responsible for the care and treatment of his alleged assassin, Lee Oswald, another PhD in physics, this time with a specialty in electromagnetism, who's an expert on the properties of light and of images of moving objects, who did a brilliant tutorial study of the existent version of the Zapruder film and discovered that, well, it's 98% technically flawless, the other 2% demonstrate that it was extensively edited. Indeed, it had 487 frames now, but they took out the turn from Houston onto Elm because the driver swung out too widely and nearly hit a concrete abutment. They had to remove that since it would have shaken the confidence of the American people in the Secret Service, where I've independently established 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting him up for the hit, where they also, the driver, William Greer, even after Jack had been twice, once in the back, about 5.5 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column, a shallow shot that only went about as far as the second knuckle on your little finger, and a shot to the throat that actually passed through the windshield en route, he was not dead. So a fellow knows the Umbrella Man kept pumping. That meant the target is still alive. Keep shooting. And a man known as a Cuban gave a fist gesture to Greer, which was his signal to stop. He pulled the limousine to a halt and to the left very abruptly. All the passengers were thrown forward. And then, during the sequence of shots that fired, Jack was hit multiple times in the back of the head by a shot fired from the Daltex. He was wearing a back brace that made it impossible for him to duck. He was a sitting target. He slumped forward after being hit back of the head. Jack eased him up, was looking him right in the face when he was hit in the right temple by a shot fired from the right front that blew his brains out the back of his head and a big chunk of his skull, known as a Harper fragment, because it was found in the grass the following day. But during this interval, a whole lot of activities took place. The motorcycle patrolman to the left parked his bike and ran up to the grassy knoll between the limousine, which he could not have done had they been in motion. More when we return from this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Ah.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, let me just say how much I appreciate Revolution Radio and its commitment to freedom of speech, which is becoming increasingly rare in America today. It's shocking that this once great nation has descended into a cesspool of deceit and corruption, where censorship abounds, where those who try to explain what's going on to the public are the subject of a weaponized variety of the law, which is used to suppress them. I mentioned that mine was a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation. They're illegal in some 38 states because they're brought in order to punish an individual for speaking out on an issue where the powers that be, shall we say, prefer not to be articulated. So they bring the lawsuit to for the purpose of retribution, right? Just pure punishment for setting an example. This is what's going to happen if anyone else follows your lead and also tries to speak up about these matters. I mean, look what's happened with Sandy Hook. Sophia Smallstorm was demonized. James Tracy was demonized. Wolfgang Helbig was demonized. Alex Jones is demonized. I've been demonized. Why? Because we were exposing what happened at Sandy Hook, that it was a massive fraud. But the perps, many of whom have served in the highest position, I'm convinced that Sandy Hook was a Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Eric Holder operation. We actually had about a few weeks before Sandy Hook on a show about Greater Boston, the mayor of Boston appeared. The host was Andy Rooney's daughter, and he was boasting about his close friendship with the vice president, Joe Biden, at the time, of course. And he explained to her that he'd learned from the vice president gun control would be a done deal by January of 2013. And, of course, Andy Rooney's daughter was just floored. What could possibly happen to cause legislation to pass so fast? He wouldn't say, but it's obvious he had Sandy Hook in mind. And I'm quite sure we have Bruce in Texas. Bruce, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Hey, hello, Jim. A little windy. I'm going to get to a place where I hear you a little better. Just give me a minute there. Keep talking, I guess.
Well, you go ahead, Bruce. I'm glad to have you. Welcome your thoughts. Go ahead, share them. Yeah, we heard the wind in the background.
Okay, yeah, I was looking into filing a civil case in small claims court against this crook who runs a business. And even in small claims court in Texas, you're entitled to a trial by jury.
I like that. That's a nice point. Yes. Even in small claims court. And you're not talking in small claims court about judgments in excess of $1 million, as in the case of Alex Jones and me. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just pretty troubling there that they can get away with this. The corruption is just neck deep at this point, you know, and we're treading water.
Well, it's built right into the law, and I don't see any way there's going to be an end to it. If individuals are subjected to this abuse, like Alex Jones and myself don't speak out about it. I mean, my feeling is if I don't speak out about this, who can be expected to? I mean, I've had a lot of benefits from this nation, a superior education, a Marine Corps service, resigned my commission as a captain to enter graduate school, to earn a PhD in the history and the philosophy of science, 35 years in higher education, offering courses principally in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning. And since my retirement, devoting where I began this research into the assassination of JFK back in 1992, so I've now been at this for 30 years. And if I, as a former Marine Corps officer and a retired university professor who has been through the mill here, who knows what happens in courts of law now, in particular in Wisconsin, do not speak out about it, who in the world will? I mean, I'm in a unique position to do that. And I believe that's also part and parcel of why they want to silence me and why I've been a target of such aggressive action. And well, I believe my case on the merits is airtight by virtue of delaying consideration of my motion to stay, which would have all these activities of trying to collect this judgment, which are unwarranted and unjustifiable until the 17th of August. There's the opportunity for the plaintiff to go about attempting to collect. And he has induced my publisher, who is the actual owner of JamesFetzer.org, not I, to turn the domain over, to point it to PosnerVFetzer.com, where you'll find these documents online, so that as of 5 p.m. Thursday, that's what's going to happen, 5 p.m. Eastern time Thursday. Meanwhile, I'm going to, you know, do everything I can to put together a different blog instead of JamesFetzer.org, JamesHFetzer.org, and carry on. Now, I'll suffer the loss of lots of links because they're all tied to the blog by means of the URL, JamesFetzer.org, but I just have no alternative. There is nothing else I can do about it. But you make a very nice point, Bruce, that even in a small claims court, you're entitled to a trial by jury. And we're talking about what less, those are matters up to $1,000 is my surmise.
Yes. And, you know, just looking not only your case, but Julian Assange, and like you mentioned, Alex Jones, and even Donald Trump, you know, they're all examples of lawfare for political purposes. And so, you know, our country is way down to crapper. I mean, when you've got all your education and made all your career, that's when whistleblowers were protected, when the media was considered a fourth estate, a watchdog. Now it's the lapdog. It's the attack dog of the corrupt establishment. It's just pretty sad. Can I ask you on a totally different topic something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Not that your main topic isn't important, because it definitely is. Have you been following this whole scam between the Ukraine, MI6, CIA, trying to get Russian pilots to defect with fighter bombers?
Repeat that, Bruce. I'm not sure I am current on this. Tell me what's going on, this Ukraine-Russia thing. What is it?
Yes, there's a media organization called Bellingcat Russia. They've been implicated in a plot. They were busted red-handed. They approached several pilots in the Russian Air Force by following the social media, offering them $1 million, $1.5 million in effect with a fighter bomber. Actually, one of the aircraft they wanted was a Tu-22, which is a just a full-out bomber. The defect to the West, and they're going to give a new identity, et cetera, et cetera. And in order for them to show that they were legitimately interested, the pilots took photographs of themselves climbing in the cockpits with numbers on cards, and they sent those to the foreign agents. Now, these pilots tipped off the FSB in Russia to the whole thing, so they turned it to a honeypot. And right before these pilots were supposed to defect with their aircraft, the Ukrainians gave up their entire air defense network parameters to give them a hole to get through. So Russia used that information in their special operations, so I'm sure Ukrainians died as a result of this this thing they're trying to do. But I'm just wondering, why would the West want these bombers to go across the border? Did they want to use them for a false flag? Were they going to backstab these pilots and shoot them down if they crossed the border, claiming that Russia's trying to bomb Poland, whatever? That would be the reason for NATO involvement. I mean, the whole thing is fishy and stinks. You can find it on RT. I'll send you links to the story.
Well, remember, Bruce, they're trying to draw NATO into a direct conflict with Russia. Now, this is actually a really, really bad idea, because NATO would not like to acknowledge the fact of the matter, but Russia is far superior militarily to NATO. They've even run war games, and if they're in a NATO-Russia conflict restricted to the continent, Russia overwhelms NATO in 5 days. If it's broadened to the United States, frankly, I believe it will be a much shorter war, because you'll have more powerful weapons, ICBMs, and the like. And remember, Russia has already made it clear that the first target is not going to be Berlin or Paris or Warsaw, but London. And indeed, that's very appropriate. It reflects understanding that, as Muammar Gaddafi observed, if you want to end terrorism in the world, just lob a cruise missile into the city of London. Because this is all being orchestrated by the Rothschild banking empire, which is behind the Great Reset. And listen to this. Klaus Schwab, of course, who runs the World Economic Forum, is himself a Rothschild. But Nathan Rothschild has said, if we lose Ukraine, then the New World Order cannot move forward. So I hail Vladimir Putin as the champion of the world, because he's out to defeat not only Ukraine, but the New World Order. I mean, it's stunning to me. This is the same guy who said that the West has to give up its automobiles. I mean, I can't think of a more harebrained claim to make, but this means they're getting absolutely desperate. Not only that, but Russia can prevail in so many ways. They have the best anti-missile missiles in the world. They have the best anti-ship missiles in the world. They have the best anti-ship torpedoes in the world. These are all virtually unstoppable. They have their new ICBM with some 15 independent targetable warheads. 15 independently targetable warheads. I think one or two could take out France. One easily take out the UK. In relation to the U.S., they don't even need such heavy hardware. They have submarines off the coast that could deploy a dirty bomb over the east coast of the United States and render the entire region, including our financial center in New York City, uninhabitable for 250 years. Think about that. Or alternatively, just expose an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse over the United States, and take out our electrical grid. I mean, everything is going to grind to a halt. And it's just absolutely stunning. they're starting to put up warning signs in New York and L.A. that in case of a radiological attack, right, they don't want to talk about an atomic bomb. You're supposed to, number one, go inside, take a shower, and then tune in and listen to reports. But if there's a nuclear attack, there may be no building to go in. Most certainly, if there's a building you can go in, the water won't be working because the pumps will be out. And number three, there won't be any broadcast going on, even if you have emergency radios. It's unlikely, though I think those are the most likely to be able to remain, you know, these independent radios, microwave, high frequency, you know, everyone will know whereof I speak. But the whole idea is just calamitous. And Biden, of course, is really not running the country. I mean, how could he? He can barely get his socks on in the morning. He doesn't know where to turn, what to say. After a podium, he shakes the air. He asks, what do I do now? He's so incompetent. He's become he's become a joke and made America the laughing stock of the world. Brian, I know you agree with a lot of that. Let me give you a chance to get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, Bruce. If you go to Un's Review, Philip Giraldi has an article up there. It might still be on the first page. How Jewish is the war against Russia? And then he goes all the way down the list, going back past 9/11 to the neocons, and then we have the neolibs, and they're just two wings of the same bird. That's who's running our government. And on today's crosstalk with Peter Lavelle on RT, the English-spoken political talk show, it was mentioned that Donald Trump interrupted their plans. That's why they wanted Hillary Clinton in there. She was Secretary of State during the major coup, and that's why they're so damn adamant to get him out the first time in 2020 and to prevent him from running again. This is their whole enchilada rolled up into Ukraine surviving the Russian onslaught and being a launching point for breaking up Russia.
Brian, you're 100%, you're 100% correct. Donald Trump was a breath of fresh air. I've had rather strenuous arguments with some of my dearest colleagues, including Scott Bennett and David Kinney, about Trump, because they think he's flawed. And they regard his flaws as so serious that they want to discount him. I see him as flawed, but not so seriously that he can't do a lot of good for the country. I mean, remember during that first term, even though he had everyone working against him, there were all kinds of stooges in his administration who were countermanding or working against him. He nevertheless gave us a robust economy, the lowest wage earners were seeing their wages rise at the highest rate, the fastest rate. He secured the border. It would have been relatively effortless to complete the wall. And he made us energy independent. All of those were phenomenal accomplishments. And I think virtually every American today can look back on the 4 years of Trump as the good old days compared to what we've had with Biden ever since he came into office. And his first act was to cancel the XL pipeline and revoke permits for drilling on federal land. Perhaps Mitchell would like to share a few thoughts of his own, too. Mitchell, you're welcome to join the conversation with me and Brian. If Mitchell's unavailable, go ahead, Mitchell.
Okay, yeah, as long as can I unmute? I can't tell. Wait a minute.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, because my Skype's working pretty weird. Well, it's a full-blown drive against the truth, against truth and reality. And everything is weaponized on the front end and the back end. And the duplicity of the system is a complete failure from what we see today. If that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. 100%. We see it everywhere, everywhere, every direction, everywhere you look.
Yeah, somebody, I had heard a joke a few minutes ago that asked me, what was the difference between Pfizer and Kyle Rittenhouse?
Pfizer and Kyle Rittenhouse? Yeah, go ahead.
His three shots worked.
His shots work, yeah, that's good, yeah.
But, you know, Jim, we live in this time where everybody has been uncertain. And what they think they know and what they know and what they're really certain they know, that has all been wiped from them. Mostly because of the mainstream media. And it's, you know, the political psyops and the psychological operations that are run online. You know, we can't think freely today. They will not let us, just as Stalin, you know, as Noam Chomsky said in an interview, you know, at least in the Soviet Union, you know, they had Air America or Free Air America or whatever the hell it was called. They had the BBC. They couldn't get news from the outside. Today in America, it is essentially a totalitarian, dictatorial news state that people do not get a counterpoint of view. They don't get another argument or a counter argument. The only thing people are allowed to hear today is the official government story, as if it came directly from Stalin or from the KGB or from some other, you know, dictator. And that's a sad epithet for America that we're seeing as it's burning to the ground. And the Democrats are pouring gasoline on the fire and pouring gasoline on the Constitution. We had how many billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of damage over the summer of 2020? And they are essentially trying to politically assassinate Donald Trump again for the January 6th. And what I know is that it's all a lie. Every bit of it has been a lie. And people get convinced of the lie, as you know, you tell a lie long enough, it's people are going to eventually believe it. And, you know, and the ones that don't, you know, they look like outsiders. So, yeah, I'm trying to call Paul back.
Well, Paul called in. Sure. Glad to have him.
Yeah, he called in. But like I said, my Skype's having some issues right now.
And Paul, we want to get you on. We want to get you on, Paul. So just stand by.
We got about 4 minutes, but I don't know if because of shutting down my Skype and restarting.
Yeah, Paul can barely take a deep breath in 4 minutes. But if he's there, I'd be glad to have him join.
He's not here yet. I'm trying to add him. Hopefully okay. He's here.
Okay.
Maybe. No.
Paul, if you're there, go ahead.
Paul,
speak out.
Here, yell at us.
Paul, go ahead. Speak out.
Yeah, it's showing him list added, but I don't hear him.
Well, Mitchell, I think you're absolutely right. The massive censorship here, I mean, if it meant anything, if it means anything to be an American, it's to be able to speak freely in criticizing your government. But that's no longer permitted. We're not able to talk about the theft of the 2020 election, even though the evidence is overwhelming. We're not allowed to challenge the vax or the pandemic, even though the death toll is staggering. We're not allowed to question the competence or the ability of the president of the United States, even though he's clearly beyond senile and making the nation the laughingstock of the world. We're not allowed to do those things, meaning we're no longer living in America. We're not even living in a close facsimile. We're not even living in an approximation. We're living in a tyrannical state. We're living in a despotism. We're living in a tyranny. And every American had better get that clear, understand that from beginning to end. We're no longer enjoying freedom of speech. We no longer have freedom of the press. We don't even have freedom of assembly, because they're demonizing that too. Witness the January 6th, which was so massively orchestrated, where it now appears that even the Department of Defense was involved. So that Adam Schiff has added a peculiar little amendment to the National Defense Appropriation Act that includes not following up on any evidence related to violation of posse comitatus that precludes the use of military force to perform police functions. There's a lot going on here just beneath the surface. Don't let yourself be played. In an open-ended poll where they were asking, what are the issues of greatest concern? The 22 foremost issues, beginning with inflation, number one, way out in front. Number two, problems with the price of gas and groceries. Number two, the January 6th issue was not even among the top 22. So when the Democrats think they're going to put their eggs in the basket of January 6th, or even gun control or abortion, I don't think it's going to fly. The Supreme Court has made a number of very clear and, in my opinion, constitutionally appropriate rulings about concealed carry, that you don't need a permit, that it's guaranteed by the Constitution, and that the EPA exceeded its boundaries and authority by trying to promote green energy, which is going to bring the entire nation to a halt. It's the shortest path to rubble that the world could have to buy into, where Joe Olson and I have done a 9-part series you can find on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Remember now, my blog is going to be taken out. Next time I speak to you, which will be Friday, I will no longer be in control of jamesfetzer.org. It'll be redirected to posnervfetzer.com, where you'll find documents related to this subsidiary lawsuit in which I'm engaged, where they're trying to bottle me up to silence me because they don't want the public to know what really happened at Sandy Hook. Thanks for being here. See you Friday.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny?
Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and the